I'm with you. It's the right time. Let's go.
It's the right time. Well, welcome everybody to the initial meeting of the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. And if I have to say that at a committee meeting, it's a mouthful. All right. For the record, it is whatever day it is, May 25th, 2016. Our first order of business is adoption of the committee rules. They're the standard rules you have in front of him. The chair moves adoption of the rules. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Don't move unanimous consent.
Is there any opposition? Rules are adopted. Okay. Ooh, next up, we're into, let's see, open remarks of the presiding officers. Madam Speaker, Mr. President, you're on. Why did you call us here?
Can we ask questions now?
Let's go straight.
Good afternoon, colleagues. How we doing? Oh, come on.
It's 5:15.
Transportation. 5:15 on Thursday. Hi, everyone. I'm Tina Kotek. I'm the Speaker of the Oregon House and State Representative from House District 44 in the good neighborhoods of North and Northeast Portland. Senate President and I were just talking about... He was asking about Representative McEwen, our other co-chair. She unfortunately is on vacation, so.
We thought she was doing a field study.
Thank
on
you.
Transportation yes. Projects in other places.
Yes, I think it's definitely a field project. So good afternoon, colleagues. I think you have a letter from the governor that you should have received. I want to start off by thanking the governor for her leadership on this issue. We are facing a tremendous challenge here in our state, and I'm really grateful that the Senate President, myself, and the Governor are all in alignment about the top priority for the 2017 session, which is a transportation package. In fact, we get asked a lot, what are you going to do next year? First thing out of my mouth is always transportation. And you, my lucky colleagues, are at the forefront of this discussion. So I want to say thank you to our co-chairs, our vice chairs, and all of you for the commitment you are making by being on this committee and for willing to spend a good chunk of your summer working on this issue. In order to develop a package that actually meets our state's transportation needs, we really do need to hear from people from around the state. And that's the goal of the travel schedule that you have in front of you. Because we have people all over the state using the transportation systems we have every day, and we need to know what they think. We need to talk to the community stakeholders to identify those needs. We all know we have needs, and build support for a comprehensive transportation package that not only our state needs, but deserves. And therefore, the work you're embarking on is absolutely critical. I'm sure on your tours, you're going to see many examples of highways that need paving and culverts that need fixing and bridges that need repair and renovation. You're going to see ports. You're going to see rail connections. You're going to see all elements of our transportation system and hear what the needs are. And I think one of your challenges is going to be that you're going to hear there are a lot of needs. We're going to have a presentation on the visioning panel, and you'll see a staggering number of an annual need just to fix everything. So your job will be to hear those needs and try to prioritize to some degree what you're hearing from the communities of where do we go first. Right now, with your work and your commitment, we have an opportunity to change the trajectory of the state. We all know that we have an infrastructure that needs improving. We have Oregonians on bad roads, unsafe bridges, and congested highways every day. And it has a real impact on our economy and on our quality of life that we as Oregonians treasure. So together we have a chance to come up with creative solutions, to modernize our system, to maintain our current system. And I would just encourage all of you, I already know you're going to work hard, and I really do appreciate that. But I also ask you to be bold, be creative, and think about, this is about the future of our state. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of you on the road, listening to your summaries when you're back in September, and going from there. So thank you, and I will pass it off to my esteemed colleague, the Senate President.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm State Senator. And for the record, I am the presiding officer of the Oregon State Senate, and I have to say that because I'm responsible for seven of you being on this committee. Thank you for being willing to go on this mission. I was going to call it a mission impossible, but that gets off to a bad start. So it is a mission. You are here working overtime when you could be have been on the road home getting an early start for Memorial Day weekend, because it's after 5 o'clock on Wednesday. You have signed up for a rugged tour of duty. You're willing to go to the far reaches of Oregon. When I saw the litany of places that they picked, I have never seen a legislative committee with such an exhaustive reach as you will undertake. Even when Ways and Means does their tour, and all the years I've been involved in that, I have never seen anything as comprehensive as this committee is about to embark on in terms of trying to reach out to all parts of our great state. Now, there's going to be plenty of distractions, including the fact that we're all running against each other. But we appreciate your willingness to focus on this important task, making Oregon a better place, making sure that she can move her people, her products, her economy, as well as to make sure that our society goes forward. All agree transportation is important. The American Society of Civil Engineers gives Oregon's infrastructure a C. Well, Oregon is not a C student. She never has been, and if she is, she doesn't like it. Oregon likes to be an A student. The Oregon Department of Transportation tells us that half of Oregon's bridges were built in the 50s and 60s. They're old. They're very old, and they're wearing out. With every year that passes, 70 or more of our bridges become structurally dangerous, deficient. One in five of our bridges is deficient, either structurally or in some other way. And far too few would survive this big quake that's going to hit us one day. Some can be fixed, others simply have got to be replaced. Everywhere in all four corners of Oregon, people are talking about the need to improve Oregon's transportation system, all four corners of our state. The poor condition of our roads cost Oregonians $236 a year in auto repairs every year. You are going to be the eyes and ears of the Oregon legislature. It will be your eyes and ears that hear from the business and the community leaders throughout the state. Your eyes and ears that will hear from the farmers and the ranchers and truckers. Your eyes and ears that will hear from Oregon and her people. And with your eyes and ears, you, this group of august great people, you will be the ones that point the way, that finds a path to build a better road for Oregon. In my legislative career, I don't think we've ever tried this thing before. I served on one of these efforts a few years ago, but it was a, shall we say, a work group. Now, we came up with a plan after we'd done some interesting wheeling and dealing, and then we gave it to the transportation committees, and it went from there. That has been the usual approach. This is the first time in my memory that we've tried a magnificent joint committee of individuals to do this very much in the open, across the state, very comprehensively. There are risks in this. There are just very grave risks in this. There are 14 individuals in front of me who bring their own perspectives and views.
20% of those in this country who identified.
Was that me?
No.
I never used it.
You're fine,
Mr.
President.
Don't worry about it.
God, I was on a roll. Now I'm shocked. I've never recalled this kind of effort, this kind of attempt. You know, I was talking to the press callman today because a certain press release came out from the governor raving about this person that we just approved on the Senate floor at 11:20. What is it, a resilience officer, I believe. And she says, what do you think about that? I says, the most important thing that's happening in the building today is happening at 5:15. And it's happening, and they didn't know that. And I said, that will be the deciding factor about how successful we are with the resilience officer. Because let me tell you, that committee has got to save us and our roads and our bridges from the Great Quake, or we literally will shut down parts of our states for at least 5 years and wipe out the economy.
Yeah.
There is no question that your role is probably the most important role that's ever been given to a joint committee that I'm familiar with. No disrespect to the other joint committees specially put together. I'm extremely grateful to you. So I'm going to use a phrase that's often used with veterans, and I recently used it in a dedication ceremony for the state police. Right now, I want to make it clear. I want to thank you for your service.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Mr. President. Most appreciated, and we'll do the best we can.
We know you will.
Does anybody have a question? Senator?
Just a comment based on your opening remarks. I would hope that we would all adopt a mindset of system-wide continuous improvement commencing in 2017. I think when we speak about a package, it reinforces the notion of episodic legislative engagement. We did a package in 2009 and then nearly nothing, nothing for nearly a decade. And that attitude, I think, has contributed to the deterioration of the system. If we think of this as not these periodic engagements, but rather a continuous improvement and continuous investment mindset, maybe we won't dig the hole quite as deep the next time.
Any other comments? Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you all.
And the governor has asked that we read her letter, and I would ask staff to do that. Patrick?
Sure. Dear Co-Chair Beyer, Co-Chair McEwen, and distinguished committee members, I regret that I am unable to join you as you kick off your first meeting of the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to offer testimony for the record and grateful for your participation in this important committee. I want to begin by extending my appreciation to President Peter Courtney and Secretary Tina Kotek for forming this committee. Your committee will serve as a critical forum for Oregonians to communicate directly with state policymakers on the need to improve our transportation system. I applaud your willingness to hold joint committee hearings across the state this summer and for partnering with the Oregon Transportation Commission on a series of tours that will accompany those hearings. The information you will gather will go a long way in guiding legislative discussions about the future of our state's transportation system. I believe that a transportation system that is both safe and efficient is key to healthy communities and underpins a strong economy. Oregon's multimodal transportation system has been a comparative advantage for our trade-dependent economy as we've competed for jobs with other regions and sought to export products from producers all across our state. But today, Oregon is facing a tremendous challenge with crumbling transportation infrastructure, mind-numbing congestion, and newly realized natural threats that put this system at risk. A recently released report from the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel entitled One Oregon, A Vision for Oregon's Transportation System provides this committee with a good starting point on the scope of need. I know that Vision Panel members will be providing you with a detailed summary of the Vision Panel's findings today. Without taking away from their remarks, I do know I am particularly interested in the key regional findings related to congestion, transit, and seismic needs across Oregon, as well as the top finding about the importance of investment in the preservation and maintenance of our state's transportation system. I'm committed to seeking additional investments for transportation during the 2017 legislative session. I believe that such a package must be robust and meet the needs for communities all across Oregon. Each of you has a critical role to play in identifying that need. I ask you to come to this discussion with an open mind to creative solutions to this important challenge. I thank each of you personally for your commitment to serving your state and look forward to working with each of you as we begin the conversation with our fellow Oregonians. Sincerely, Governor Kate Brown.
That is posted, I believe, on the committee website. Copies are available both to each of us as well as to the public. Next up is just a review of the work schedule and commitment, and as we say, that actually starts on Friday. Patrick, would you want to do that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This has also been sent to you individually and is posted on OLIS for public viewing. It's been released as a press release. Today's the first meeting. Friday, we have a tour of the Woodburn and Aurora I-5 interchanges. That material has been sent to you as well. If you have any questions, you can feel free to contact me. Future meetings, the next meeting after that will be June 13th at 5 p.m. at the Great Hall on Mount Tabor Building in Portland Community College in Portland. The following meeting after that will be a two-day meeting trip, June 28th, and Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, followed the next day by a meeting in Hermiston at the Hermiston High School Auditorium on June 29th. The next meeting after that will be July 20th at the University of Oregon in Eugene. And then we have another gap of almost a month before we meet August 18th in Bend, Oregon, followed by a meeting 2 weeks later, August 31st in Medford. And then 2 weeks after that at the Embarcadero Hotel in Newport on the 15th of September. That's actually a Thursday. Then the following Monday on the 19th, we'll be meeting in Hillsboro. And then the last meeting will be on a date to be determined during the September legislative days, which are Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of that same week, Mr. Chair.
So in case you didn't have anything else to do this summer, do a wonderful scenic tour of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question of you and staff. I'm assuming that most of these are public input meetings.
Yes.
That's our intent here, so that we can reach out to as many members of the citizenry as possible.
Correct. Any other questions on that or comments on the schedule? Seeing none. Well, we have one more thing tonight, and it's the start off for the report from the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel. Just sent the report out, and I believe we're going to have Mr. Warner and Mr. Mulvihill. Am I missing anything, Patrick?
I think Sam's going to join them, but other than that,
oh,
yes.
Sam. Oh.
Mr. Chair, Patrick, you heard me. It's only 20 slides.
I may have erred.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, or good evening, I guess it is, Co-Chair Byer, Co-Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Warner. I am a member of the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel, and as you said, with me is Dennis Mulvihill. I lost him, but he's also a member of the panel. And to my left and your right is Sam Hafner, who is the project manager on this project for the Governor's Office. We want to provide you with a very quick summary of the final report, which I understand all of you have and been transmitted to you. And I'm going to go through this quickly as I can, and also hopefully provide opportunities for questions. I know you'll interrupt us if we need to get to some of the issues right away. So first off, the question is always, who is the Vision Panel members? And what you see here is a slide of the panel. It's a group of civic and business leaders from around the state, stakeholders, and community members. And it also includes a number of you. And I want to thank you for your participation on this committee. The overview and the task of this panel was, first off, to assess the condition and challenges facing Oregon's transportation system, in other words, the current condition, develop a long-term vision, and create recommendations in the near term to lay groundwork for that vision. In other words, hopefully something that could be actionable for you in the 2017 session and beyond. Governor Brown did relaunch the effort and wanted to make sure that we also considered seismic resiliency and congestion as major topics of this panel. The work has been done in a few phases. The panels was actually convened in November of 2014. The subcommittee conducted its work during 2015. There was a slight break from about March to August, and Governor Brown restarted the committee in August. The committee's developed preliminary recommendations, and we went around the state in regional forums, which you're going to hear about in a moment. And the final report was delivered to the governor on May 17th, 2016. The name of the report, One Oregon, recognizes that while regions of the state have their own distinct characteristics and priorities, the panel found common threads shared across all of Oregon. And I want to acknowledge Senator Winters for the title of this document. You actually brought that up at one of our meetings, and we utilized that, so thank you. On the regional forums, you're going to be out around the state again, but we, between January and March of this year, had a series of events throughout the state, regional forums, 11 of them. These forums were meant to provide an opportunity to hear from community members about what is important for their regions, transportation connections to the rest of the state, as well as how the transportation impacts our local economy and growth. These forums really did help assess the strengths and weaknesses of each region's transportation system. Very quickly, I want you to know that the top overall finding from the Transportation Vision Panel was that we need to focus some efforts and resources on maintenance and preservation. It's a challenge across the state. Communities recognize investment in maintaining what we have is just fundamental. They know that we've invested billions of dollars in the transportation system we enjoy today, and it's too important to the state's economic vitality to let them deteriorate. So it was heartening to hear throughout the state that communities recognize the high cost of deferred maintenance. And then there were really three other major findings that that came out as a result of these regional forums. First was on congestion. And what we heard was that congestion in the Portland metro area is having a major impact on the economic vitality of all regions of the state. It not only creates challenges for commuters and businesses in the metro area, it is also making it difficult for producers across the state to move their goods into and through Portland in a predictable, reliable, and timely fashion. Secondly, which is really important to me, we heard a lot at every one of the forums about the importance of transit. In all 11 forum meetings, transit was identified as a top priority to get people around locally and to connect to communities across the region. Transit is seen as an essential tool to help workers, students, seniors, and people with disabilities to move around. And forum participants said that transit is important to support tourist economies and to attract a talented and diverse workforce and to help us meet our carbon reduction goals. And then finally, the other major finding was around seismic preparedness. Concern for livability from a major Cascadia subduction zone event is not limited to Oregon's coastal communities. It is a powerful and real-time worry for people living east of the Cascades who are keenly aware that they will be the staging ground for recovery efforts to assist coastal communities and valley communities. And we did hear this most loudly in Central Oregon. And if you haven't seen the OPB special called Unprepared, I think you can stream it down. But it gives you an idea why Central Oregon is concerned about this issue. What I'd like to do now, if it's okay with the co-chair, is to ask Sam Hafner, who was at every one of these regional forums, to give you a very brief summary of some of the significant things we heard in each of those summaries. And I think hopefully you'll hear more of those when you're out on the road, too.
All right. So for the record, Sam Hafner, project manager to the Transportation Vision Panel. And as Bruce said, I had the opportunity to travel to all these regional forums across the state. And I will say the weather for our regional forums wasn't quite as nice as the tour that you'll be taking this summer. So, we traveled to 11 different forums around the state and heard from community members from all over the place. So I'll just start briefly. Bruce talked about the sort of the common themes, and I want to talk about some of the unique priorities and unique challenges throughout the state. So starting with coastal Oregon, when we went out to the coastal communities, you know, consistently we heard the importance of coastal and lower Columbia River ports, which are the backbone of Oregon's coastal economies, and how underinvestment in these ports is really hindering the economic potential of the region up and down the coast. We also heard about the importance of freight mobility and multimodal freight connections, allowing businesses that export their products to get their products to market from coastal communities. And we consistently, like we heard throughout the state, heard about the seismic importance, particularly out on the coast, where it's not only an economic recovery challenge, but there are the lifeline routes, immediate needs, survivability, and the role of transportation in that. We traveled to the Willamette Valley, had a series of meetings in the Willamette Valley up and down, some consistent themes there, many of them tied to the key themes that Bruce discussed, ones around transit. And what we heard in those communities is really in terms of transit, inner-city connections were key. We have a growing population up and down the valley. We often have good transit service within the cities, but sometimes between those cities, where there is a great demand, we sometimes fall short. And we also heard consistently up and down the valley that transit is an important tool for relieving growing congestion as the population increases. We heard consistently about the importance of safe, reliable bicycle and pedestrian facilities. and how those can be a tool for reducing roadway demand, increasing roadway safety, and relieving some of our congestion across the state. And certainly, as we heard in all the communities, we heard specifically about bottlenecks and congestion on our corridors, particularly I-5, 205. You know all the usual suspects, but those major congestion areas within the metro area. As we traveled to Southern Oregon, again, we heard consistently about transit, a little bit of a unique spin. There's definitely recognition of the importance of transit in the southern region around the Rogue Valley. They have a growing population. There's a great demand for transit as that population grows, but not necessarily the adequate tax base to provide the transit system that they need. We also heard a lot about seismic and very key concerns around seismic for that community. Although they aren't on the coast, they do have a lot of waterways, and they are surrounded by mountains. So there is deep concern in that community around potential isolation in the aftermath of a Cascadia subduction event impacting not only survivability recovery, but also economic recovery as well. And we also heard consistently great bicycle and pedestrian facilities to that community contributes to the great way of life in Southern Oregon. But what we did also hear is that sometimes, although we have great facilities out there, there aren't always those connections between communities. So that was highlighted as a concern. And consistently, would be remiss to not mention the importance of freight mobility and speaking to companies that export their products, agriculture and manufacturing products, out of Southern Oregon, and the challenges they face traveling north along the I-5 corridor, congestion in Portland. As we move to Central Oregon, as Bruce alluded to, it was very surprising for us hearing consistent discussion about the importance of Central Oregon of the seismic challenges. As many of you know, Central Oregon will be the fallback community and the source of the recovery in response to a disaster. And we consistently heard the importance of Highway 97 enhancing the resiliency of the state in the aftermath, again, in terms of economic recovery as well as survivability and bringing Oregon back to its feet. And closely tied to that, the importance of rural airports and the role they'll play in a seismic event, as well as the consistent need for airports to grow rural economies in that region, as well as respond to things like forest fires and just a whole host of things. And we also heard the importance of bicycle and pedestrian facilities in Central Oregon. A little bit of a unique spin to this. We heard quite a bit about the importance of growing bicycle tourism economies and how there's great potential in those rural communities to bring tourists to the region and those growing towns having good pedestrian connections to grow a talented workforce into the community. We also consistently heard about rural transit in the region. One of the unique challenges that I think Central and Eastern Oregon face in terms of providing transit to its people is they have a very large geographic area. And as they grow, there is demand, but that demand is over a large service area. So the marginal cost of transporting people becomes higher. And then as we move to Eastern Oregon, consistently we heard through Eastern Oregon, maintenance, the importance of maintaining our roads in that region is vital to the economy and vital to the livelihood of Eastern Oregon. One of the unique challenges Eastern Oregon faces because of the low population density and because of the high number of roads out there, many of the communities, cities, and counties out there struggle just to keep their roads paved and their bridges safe to cross. So we consistently heard that story as we went to those communities. We also heard the importance of ports and barging through the region, and as the region attempts to export its many products, including agricultural products, strong reliance on a reliable marine system and port system across the state. And again, similar to Central Oregon, we heard consistently about the importance of bicycle tourism, and we also heard about safety and the importance of reducing conflicts, particularly during harvest season out there, conflicts between bicyclists and freight traffic. And again, as with Central Oregon, we heard consistently about the importance of rural airports supporting local economies as well as firefighting efforts.
Good. So. Thank you. So this slide, it just shows you that, and I think you're all aware of this, in the next few years and many years beyond, there's a number of challenges and opportunities that face the state of Oregon. Clearly things like growing population, the changing demographics and aging of the population, our aging transportation system. There's some exciting things happening in technology. And then the seismic vulnerability is our issues we all need to confront and worry about as we look to the future. The committee came up with a vision, and the vision is something I think we all want, which is we believe that in 2045, Oregon will have a transportation system that is in a state of good repair. It's largely resilient to major natural disasters. It's financially stable and meets the needs of its people and its economy. This system will support a healthy and livable Oregon, and its communities will have access to safe and reliable transportation options. We'll have a multimodal transportation system that's going to enhance mobility, whether Oregonians choose to move by either a car, train, bus, boat, airplane, bicycle, or by foot. And we'll have a safe, reliable, and efficient multimodal freight network. And you heard a little bit about some of the desires from Sam just now. The whole intent is it's going to allow Oregon businesses to efficiently access regional, national, and international markets. And we also believe that the system of the future will allow the state to meet its greenhouse gas reduction goals through strategic investments, and the state's transportation assets will be under the appropriate jurisdictional control, and those jurisdictions responsible for those assets will be accountable and garner a high level of public trust, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit more. In terms of basic findings, I'm going to go through these very quickly. You heard this, the major overall finding is Oregonians have invested billions of dollars in the transportation system we enjoy today, but we no longer raise enough revenue to maintain this system, let alone enhance capacity. And everybody understands that deferred maintenance increases costs dramatically. In terms of bottlenecks, congestion in the Portland highways is impacting economic competitiveness for the entire state. At the same time, other state highways were not designed or built adequately to move today's volumes of freight traffic. So we believe we need to invest in bottleneck elimination. We need to invest in alternatives for freight, and that means things like alternative routes and intermodal facilities. We need to invest in ways to reduce commuter demands and help get free up the roads for freight. On transit, this became a major issue, and as I said, many Oregonians, particularly students, seniors, and people with disabilities, transit is critical for their daily needs, and it's becoming more and more important to get around in highly congested communities. We also heard a lot about the need to look at K-12 student transportation and see if there's ways to be more effective and efficient in the way we deliver those throughout the state. In terms of bike and pedestrian investments, walking and biking is increasingly important for Oregonians living in rural and urban communities. In the last decade alone, I was really pleased to see that walking has increased by 25% and biking has actually doubled. But the surveys have also shown that more Oregonians interested in biking and walking won't take these trips because they feel that the existing infrastructure is in their communities is unsafe. On intermodal freight, many producers cannot avoid moving goods through the already congested corridors, which creates delays, adds expense, and they do not have adequate alternatives to the non-roadway system. So investments in alternative freight hubs and transload facilities in less congested areas would clearly help keep Oregon moving on the freight side. In terms of seismic resiliency, we know that in recent years, geologists have developed a greater understanding of the risk posed to the Pacific Northwest from a Cascadia subduction zone event. And to be prepared, Oregon must have a resilient transportation system to increase survivability, provide those critical evacuation lifelines and support long-term economic recovery. Jurisdictional transfer. Some of you have probably heard about this, that you know the term orphan highways as an example. Getting the right jurisdiction to own and manage these roadways is important to better serve the traveling public and achieve developmental goals and communities' desires. And so this is one we think that the probably need to establish a jurisdictional transfer working group to actually allow this to get done in a positive way. Transportation innovation. We are very, the panel was very excited about some of the things that are happening there. The government should support an environment that fosters innovation, but at the same time safeguarding the public interest. And you may want to look to appoint a new transportation innovation officer to can actually help bring these things forward and make sure that they're implemented in the most in the best way for the state of Oregon. In terms of emissions, the reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation systems continues to be a priority for Oregonians. We actually heard that a lot out on the road. The state should consider creating an office that draws upon independent and private sector expertise to begin tracking and reporting on Oregon's carbon reduction progress. The office should regularly report to the governor's office and to the legislature on progress made to meet the state's carbon emission goals. And then the final finding is that new investments in our transportation system must be reinforced by effective statewide land use and housing policies that don't exacerbate the congestion and mobility challenges. We think that a joint effort should be made by the Oregon Transportation Commission and the Land Conservation Development Commission to ensure that our land use and transportation policies are well aligned and meet the needs of Oregon's growing population, and in fact actually aid in our desires to be more efficient and effective. Going on, in terms of financing challenges, we'll go right on to that. You know it, state and local transportation agencies are forced to defer routine maintenance of their roads and bridges due to revenue shortfalls. This deferral sharply increases costs as roadways fail and must undergo more costly reconstruction. On it, the sources of funding, underfunding of transportation system is not a challenge that's unique to Oregon. We all know that. However, Oregon's lack of a sales tax and limitations on its property tax create additional constraints on options available to make a robust transportation system investments in roadways and in transit systems. We also know that just like the state, Oregon cities and counties are falling significantly short of the resources they need to maintain their infrastructure. A lack of a sales tax, property tax, have forced local governments to really take creative approaches to raising transportation funding, or as in the case of many communities, we're sad to hear, go without the resources to meet the basic needs. And then on non-highway investments, relatively few revenue sources are available to finance non-highway transportation needs such as rail, aviation, marine, transit, and bicycle and pedestrian facilities. This is due to our constitutional limitations, and it's something, again, other states deal with the other sources of revenue. And then one that I think I've heard Senator Johnson talk about is the episodic nature of transportation funding. And revenues from the fuel tax and vehicle user fees are the foundation of Oregon State Highway Fund, but they don't increase over time the same way that property taxes, income tax, or sales taxes go up. These episodic increases in fuel tax rates and vehicle user fees have and will continue to be eroded by inflation. And I would tell the committee that I had the opportunity to travel through the state of Nevada a couple months ago, and they've got large signs on the highways saying indexing for the future. So I need to look into what they're doing there, but I suspect they're indexing their resources to be able to not have to go back every session and do things to deal with just inflation. And then you know that fuel efficiency and alternative fuels are reducing revenues for roadways, and we need to look at new options in that. And then the last finding on transportation finance is that I think we've all realized this, that Oregon should not rely solely on the federal revenues to enhance its system. I don't think anybody around the United States is now looking at the federal government to take care of its needs. We need to step up and help address our own needs. So from the panel's perspective, Our call to action is we believe state policymakers should take immediate action to increase investment that's necessary to maintain and enhance Oregon transportation system. Pretty basic. And then these last two slides, I hesitate some ways to put them up, but I want you to know that the committee actually looked at a number of options and tried to articulate how they could be used and what are some of the limitations. This is meant to be a menu of options that policymakers can continue. There's no recommendation from the vision panel on these recommendations, but I think it's something that you should look at because it gives you some valuable information on the various types of revenues that are available out there. And I believe Representative Bentz was helpful in terms of putting some of this together. So thank you for your help on this. I think it's a good piece of work. And then finally, going to that slide, which really shows kind of the sense of scale of the need. This is a slide that, again, is just meant to show you some of the investments that where you can really make a dent in things like maintenance and preservation or seismic resiliency. These are not hard numbers. These are examples of what you could do with various sources of revenue and what it would take to do various miles of bike paths or those kinds of things. But the numbers are large. There's no question about that. And you're going to hear that when you go out on the road. But we wanted you to see this as an example of what you could do with various levels of funding. So with that, again, the last slide is just to remind you who was on the panel. And we're here ready to answer any questions or hear any comments you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Questions? Comments?
You told me to be quiet until it was all done, so I'm going to stay quiet for the first time. I'm just writing red ink notes. You see that.
Unless you got a lot of red ink comments there. Are there any questions or comments? Senator Edwards.
I do have a question. In the discussions around seismic readiness or seismic preparedness, what are the assumptions about the engineering needs in all the different corners of the state? If a Cascadia subduction event happens, you know, if the epicenter is in northwestern Oregon, is that assuming that every bridge in all corners of the state needs to be built to a certain standard, or is it, I mean, has the cataloging been done about which ones are at highest risk, but maybe they're not as high of a risk in different areas?
Yes, an excellent question, Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Edwards. I am an engineer. I'm not a structural engineer, but clearly there are different design standards for different risks. I do not know, frankly, whether the design standards for a bridge in Coos Bay are the same as they are in Ontario. I don't think they are. But overall, the same general criteria apply, that we've learned a lot about what it takes to actually make a bridge resilient to earthquakes and to high levels of earthquakes. But I'm not the person that's above my pay grade, so if you want some additional information, I can get somebody to respond back to you with that, with some more information. Sam,
the only thing I would
add, I can email it to you.
Okay.
I've got the entire list. I'll send it to you.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Benson, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank you for the work on this report, because it reflects an enormous amount of work. I did attend a number of the meetings, and it was really something to see how focused everybody was and trying to help. So I really appreciate that effort. As a remark in self-defense, many of the revenue options I don't support. I was in the room, yes. But no, I appreciate all your work. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Senator?
Mine's a comment and just a suggestion for the chairs to consider. The comment is that Senator Beyer and I had the opportunity to attend the Oregon Transportation Forum, about a month ago? Mm-hmm. And sitting in a room with at least 50 people there, all representing some form of special interest. And it occurred to me in watching that tableau unfold that practically any person in that room could kill this effort. and the need to approach our task collectively and individually with a get-to-yes mentality if this is going to succeed. Not everybody's going to get every single thing they want, but not letting the perfect get in the way of the good would probably be a good standard. The other thing, Mr. Chairs and Vice Chairs, is for you all to perhaps articulate a methodology whereby people can be heard. One of my colleagues, I mean, as they're in this early stage, we'll get to negotiations at some point in time, but one of my colleagues, as we were walking down here, opined that his day today had been a revolving door of people standing outside asking for projects. And to save all of you the time and effort of running around and pitching your projects to each one of us, which will be an enormous time suck on everybody's part, it might be healthy for the chairs and the vice chairs to postulate a mechanism whereby this information can be received collectively rather than each one of us have 20 bazillion one-off meetings.
Thank you, Senator. Just the co-chair, McGowan, and I have talked about this along with staff, and one of the things we are trying to do as we tour around is to reach out and work with the Association of Oregon Industries, the counties, the cities, other business groups, to try and get them to kind of focus their thing. I have made the comment in a number of different forms that I don't want your whole laundry list. I want your priorities. I'm going to hear about
Some people have 27 priorities.
I know that. And they're not going to get all 27 priorities, probably. But that and my own, I plan to ask every single one when we hear with that who speaks to us. And we will have invited testimony as well as open an opportunity for anybody who wants to talk to come forward and talk at each of these things. And I intend to ask everyone, now that you told me what you want, how do you want to pay for it?
Yep. The one other piece of this is that I want to be respectful of the work that's going on in a variety of different forums. The Transportation Forum, I think, is working on something. The Governor's Visioning has just turned out this work product. I don't know if there are other governor's groups meeting. I don't know if there are chamber groups meeting. Metro approached me. I want to be respectful of that work product. Yeah. Conversely, the amount of information floating around could be absolutely overwhelming. And I just think it needs to be managed in some thoughtful and respectful way of the effort.
We plan to attempt to do that. Representative McLean.
Thank you. If I could add to that, not only on when they're going to have an opportunity to weigh in with what they consider to be priorities, but also the kind of information that would be helpful. Because we were just given from the governor's work group and the visioning group a vision that had goals that were embedded. And those goals that were embedded were about an investment in transportation systems. And as Senator Johnson said, in a pragmatic way that's going to lead us forward into what we want that system to look like in the future. So not only what is the project or what is the investment, I would prefer to call it an investment. Projects act like you're asking for something. I want to hear about investments that are going to really help us with the actual goals and the vision of the system we hope to achieve. And so if they could bring with their thoughts on these investments exactly how it meets the vision, the goals, and the kind of investment, the rich investment that we have to have. And do that first so that we know that we are actually working toward finding funding for something that's going to carry us forward in a pragmatic way, not in a hopscotch or patchwork quilt way. I think it's going to be important because we have limited resources.
Good comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just remind you of the early discussion before everybody started talking here. We do have 9 public hearings, and I think there's going to be ample opportunity for the public to do input. And like my colleagues, I would suggest they do it in a public environment so the rest of us don't get ambushed in a dark alley when it comes to writing the list. So.
Yes,
Mr.
Again.
Chair, one other thought, given the activities of Monday and Tuesday and some committee hearings today. if in fact, and I take her and the Senate President at their word, that the Speaker has articulated a transportation initiative, a beginning of continuous improvement to be the highest priority of the legislature, I think it's important as legislators are scurrying around assembling their legislation or potential legislation for the 2017 session that we don't end up gratuitously advancing legislative concepts that may be completely antithetical to the partners that we're going to desperately need in negotiations to bring a suite of issues forward in 17 that repair our system. And I offer that as a cautionary tale. We're going to need to build partnerships and bridges, not attempt to do those things which rip them apart.
Very good. Senator Monroe.
I remember when I was first elected to this place 40 years ago, and I served with Betsy's dad. We used to get things done in a bipartisan way, moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats working together to accomplish things. There were people on the extreme left and the extreme right that opposed what we did, but we were successful. I would like to thank the Senate President and the Speaker and the Governor for the makeup of this group, because I think this group really does reflect potential for a real bipartisan coming together, kumbaya, coming together. And I think if you look at this group, you will see that it doesn't overrepresent any one part of the state, but in fact does a good job balanced of representing all of the parts of the state, including the rural parts of the state. So I'm thankful. I'm an optimist. I'm looking forward to what we can accomplish together as we hear from the folks all over the state and as we make this the number one priority for the 17th session. So welcome aboard.
Others. Senator Winters.
Thank you. I think that that's a reason why we're calling this, and it's Title I Oregon.
I like it.
We had quite a conversation at our last meeting to get our final project on the long-range vision. I think we need to keep that in also in perspective, because we've got a short-term task right now, and there's a long-term vision, and you're correct, it should dovetail into that. But, you know, I was one that says it's about time that we do look, and since it is transportation and infrastructure, that we're talking One Oregon. There's a lot at stake, not only in the transportation system, but I think in other parts of the work that we do in this building.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Girard?
Yeah, I'd like to make two comments. One is, in rural Oregon, since I represent rural Oregon.
Yes, I know about
thank
that.
Thank you. The east-west corridors are pivotal to us. And along the coast, 101's are pivotal. I spent a lot of time over there. Number two is, if you want something, and everybody in this room probably wants something, then you need to come to the table with what you're willing to pay. And it's really hard when everybody wants something, but they want somebody else to pay for it. That's not going to fly, at least with me. So if you want more bike paths and stuff like that, bicycles need to pay. I mean, it's just that's just the way that it is. And so we need to look in from that perspective, at least. It's not going to be something that's going to be across the board.
Senators talk because the House.
We were just commenting. We're legends in our own mind over here.
Senators like to talk a lot. I've heard that from the House. Anything else?
So I'll
Representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I come from a unique district in that I represent five port authorities, and the one thing I would share with this committee is that we need to be open in our thoughts and remember that public sector investment leads to private sector investment.
Yes.
And you're going to have an opportunity, I've looked at the calendar, and you're going to have an opportunity to see some areas of the state that have chosen not to make public sector investment. And you're going to see the economic reality that has hit them.
Yep.
You're also going to have an opportunity to tour other parts of the state that have chosen to make public sector investment. And you're going to be able to see the prosperity that is followed. Yeah. And I hope we'll keep that in mind. We're given a great opportunity here. I want to compliment Senator Monroe for his comments. Madam Speaker, Senate President, I think you've put together a fabulous committee that can work well together. And I think if we let the past be the past on transportation issues and other issues that have hindered us from creating a package in the past, if we just put that behind us and we look to the future, we try to create one Oregon, as Senator Winters has commented, I think we can do great things. I'm excited to be part of this. I know our office is going to be open to everyone, and I'm coming into this with a very clean slate, with the looking at an opportunity to invest in public infrastructure.
Yes, Representative, thank you for that. You remind me of what a old mentor of mine told me about 30 years ago that I didn't believe at the time, but have come to believe, and that's, he had said that for every $5 of private investment is preceded by $2 to $3 of public investment. And it's proven to be true.
That is correct.
My observation. Any other comments? Well, colleagues, get ready to roll your sleeves up and get your traveling shoes on, and we'll see you starting on Friday, early in the morning. With that, we are adjourned.
It's Friday.
We are adjourned.
It's Friday.